Greetings, my wonderful friends, and welcome to the AddedSouls.com podcast, powered by the Spencer Church of Christ in Wisconsin. Stefan Maillet here, your audio and video servant for this episode. What are we looking at? An argument got squashed. An argument got squashed. We're in the book of Luke, the Gospel of Luke, and we are in chapter 9, and we want to look through verses 46, 47, 48, 49, and 50, I believe. And we want to make sense of what's taking place here and the principle that we can learn in this day and age, the Christian age, for us as saints in the congregation of our Lord and Master Jesus Christ. So what's taking place here is a bit of pride in the ranks, if you will, a pride in the ranks, and an argument gets squashed quickly with, of course, the authority, the wisdom of our Master Jesus Christ. So you see, an argument started among them, the disciples of Jesus Christ, this is, as to which of them, these disciples, might be the greatest. Who has the greater mark? You know, kind of again, and we do that, don't we, as human beings? We tend to categorize one's importance in relation to his social status or his economical status, his all kinds of different status, if you will, in a secular way, with secular eyes. And we deem that to be important. Oh, this person has a big house and a big boat and a big yard, and so therefore this person is a successful person, and this person is an important person, and therefore we must make sure that we treat them with the utmost of respect and priority compared to, I don't know, the homeless person. They're just lying about in the streets, you know, that stinky bum that's always bothering us for a dollar or two. And we tend to do that as human beings, and so it's nothing new in the human gene when it comes to sizing up people and things and appointments and work and labors through physical eyes, the flesh. And nothing's different here with the disciples of Jesus Christ. They want to know who has the greater status, who is the most important to Jesus in a physical, in a secular sense, in a fleshly sense. And the reason they are doing that, of course, is because their thoughts, just like the apostles, were skewed into the imagery that Christ, this Messiah that was prophesied to come and now here is with them, was going to set up an earthly kingdom, an earthly reign, a physical Israel, if you will. And their ideas were not spiritual. Their thoughts, their perceptions were not spiritual. And because of that, they were asking the question, well, who among us is going to be the greatest? Who in this kingdom of yours, God, that you're setting up on earth here physically, which one of us is going to be like the most important, the most powerful next to you, kind of a thing? But Jesus, of course, Jesus is God. He is deity, yet he is still man, but he has the powers of God, and he can see within the hearts of their thinking minds. And so because he does see this, he understands the remedy, the cure to squash this argument that they are having regarding who's going to be the greatest. They're thinking on a physical platform and not a spiritual, but Jesus, knowing what they were thinking in their hearts, took a child. Isn't that fascinating how Jesus, God on earth, wants to squash this argument? And he knows how to do it with the wisdom he has, being deity, walking earth. He takes a child. The very innocence that we seem to want to destroy in today's current culture, right? Back to the days of Molech, we see no importance in children. They're a burden, aren't they? Hollywood wants to make sure that you understand that marriage and children, it's a drag. It's boring. It's a ball and chain. It's a discouragement. It holds you back to really having fun and being adventurous and going off on journeys. Remember when you were single? That was fun, wasn't it? Oh, all this pesky children stuff, and they're just a burden. I mean, it's just not fun. Yet here Christ sees a child as the answer to a problem that his disciples were having, a grave answer, a problem of the heart. The cure, a child. And so Jesus took a child and stood him, this child, beside by his side and said to them. So Jesus spoke to the disciples who were arguing over who was going to be the greatest, who's going to be the most important, and who's going to be the most feared and revered, and who's going to have the best social status, and who's going to have all this. I mean, because Jesus is going to set up an earthly kingdom and a physical Israel, isn't he? And I want to be the most important in there, and I want people to see me, and I want people to put me as the keynote speaker in every lectureship imaginable, and I want people to bow down to me and pay me $10,000 every lecture, and I want to arrive there in a Cadillac, and I want shiny teeth, and I want really nice wavy hair, and I want the best suit money can buy, and I want people to say to me by the flocks and droves, "You're the best preacher we've ever heard. We never heard such a wonderful sermon in our lives. I want to be the greatest. I want to be the greatest." Jesus understands their hearts way off. Their hearts are way off, and the cure to their problem is a child, the innocence of a child. And so Jesus says to them, "Hey, pay attention. I want you to first look at what I'm doing here." Jesus is giving them a visual teaching moment. He takes a child, he places the child next to him. That's significant. That's a portrayal of what is innocent next to what is most authoritative, innocent, sinless, powerful, just God. God, the Son of God, the Messiah. He's showing them that what is innocent belongs next to him. You see, you disciples, you got it all wrong. You're thinking on a different level that's not a par. It's not conditioned according to spiritual wealth. The way you're thinking has secular enterprise, secular endeavors, priorities which lead to vain, useless productivity. Now see, look, this innocent child is next to me. This is where he belongs. See, innocent belongs next to me. This is a matter of the heart. This is a matter of spiritual wealth. So Jesus says to them, while he's giving them this visual teaching, he's now going to give them the verbal teaching. Whoever receives this child in my name, with my authority, receives me. If you receive the innocence of this child, you receive the authority of the Christ. And whoever receives the authority of Jesus Christ receives him, God the Father, who sent me, God the Son. For the one who is least, the disciple who is least among all of you, this is the one who is great. Your innocence, your humbleness, your obedience, your faith is what makes you great. Not your title, your social status, your self-worth of importance. None of that. It's not how many keynote positions you have at the lectureships. It's not how fancy and shiny and expensive your suit is. It's not how many likes and followers you have on Facebook or on Twitter or Instagram or YouTube. It's deeper than that. Is there anything inherently wrong with a Christian having a nice, expensive suit? Well, of course not. Is there anything wrong with a Christian having a whole bunch of friends on Facebooks and a whole bunch of likes? Well, of course not. But you see, the key to the context that we're allowing ourselves to grasp is Jesus knowing their heart, and their heart was at the wrong place. And a great many times our hearts are in the wrong place. We're thinking along the ways of the world's thinking, that we are somehow in a physical kingdom, that we are now waiting for a physical Israel, and we're thinking along the lines of how the world perceives our importance. And it's not about that. Jesus is showing them it's not about that. It's about the innocence of a child. And through that innocence and submissiveness, you know, the child, he seeks to be guided. He wants the instruction of the Father. And he belongs next to the Son. And so whoever receives this child in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives him who sent me. For the one who is least among all of you, this is the one who is great. What a powerful response to their arguments, their disputes. They were going to cause divisions over this. You know how us human beings, we do that. They're going to cause divisions over this whole thing. Because once you start thinking in a worldly way regarding who's the greatest on this planet Earth, you get division. You get division. The rich man can't sit down and have a meal with the poor man no more. Because the poor man, well, he just don't cut it. He's not of the same status. And we all know how that played out for the rich man and Lazarus, don't we? But yet John answered and said, in this account here, Luke chapter 9, verse 49, Master, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to prevent him because he does not follow along with us. You see, they were arguing amongst themselves in verse 46 on who was the greatest. They're thinking on a worldly plane. Jesus comes in and shows them what's going on in a spiritual way. And John's response, well, what about them over there? I mean, they're doing things that are pretty powerful and but they're not with us. So, I mean, I don't understand this whole greatness and not greatness thing. And Jesus, again, with his wisdom and authority, he says to John, don't hinder him. What are you worried about him for? He's not against you, is he? And if he's not against you, and he's casting out demons, then he's actually doing things that are according to our plan here. The kingdom being established. I mean, what are you so worried about? What fault is there in this that someone is casting out demons and he's not following us here? The fact of the matter is, John recognized someone who was in line with Jesus. And just because he wasn't walking next to Jesus didn't mean he was not a follower of Jesus, this person who's casting out demons. What a powerful account here. An argument is squashed. And Jesus knows exactly how to remedy the situation. And of course, John's rebuttal, you know how we do that. What about these guys? What about them? What about them? If they're doing what is right and they're adhering to the doctrine of Jesus Christ, why are you so concerned? They're doing what's right. They're working for Jesus Christ. Just because they're not doing things your way doesn't mean they're not doing things God's way. I think it's a pretty powerful insight. Pretty powerful insight into an account which reveals a teaching in principle for us today as well. We can easily get entangled, snared, webbed into this worldly appraisal, this worldly assessment where the Christian or the preacher who's the keynote preacher at the most biggest and powerful lectureship is somehow the king, and he's the greatest, and he'll have the best of the best, and he's the greatest in this physical kingdom here, this physical Israel. Well, not necessarily, right? We're all equal in God's eyes. Now, some of us work harder than others, and some of us have greater faith than others. Some of us are more mature than others, more productive than others. Right? But are we now going to begin a status quo where the secular world is our barometer? It's our standard of judgment? Well, of course not. We're not to be that way. So who's going to be the greatest? Well, Jesus says who's going to be great. It's the one who is humble, who is meek, who is merciful, who is kind, who is loving, who is strong, who is courageous, who is faithful, who is spiritual, who is peaceful. He speaks the truth in love with courage and strength. He hates sin and evil and wickedness and those who unrepentantly live and promote it. He's a child of God. He's part of a spiritual house, spiritual Israel, living as a citizen of this kingdom that God established on the day of Pentecost in Jerusalem during the Roman Empire with great power from on high. You see, that's the establishment I want to be part of, and I want to follow my master's instructions. And so this here account puts me in check all the time, makes me look into the mirror all the time, so that I remain humble and that I remain the one who is there to be benevolent and to help the needy, to be evangelistic, to share Jesus unashamedly. No shame at all. I want to be great according to God's standard and not man's standard. And when I do that, I won't be worried about other brethren and other ministries doing wonderful works just because they're not in my fold. It would kind of be like if, you know, the Added Souls ministry says, every other ministry is not with us or among us, so therefore they're garbage. And why are they allowed to even do anything for God anyways? Because they're not doing it according to our standards here in this worldly way of looking. And what if all the other ministries did that? What if GBN said, hey, we're the top dogs here and we're the big hats and we're the ones that do everything the right way and I don't know why these little pesky Added Souls people and those pesky little others there, they're just little rodents. We don't want them around. See, we're the greatest and they're not. What if GBN had that kind of an attitude? What about Apologetics Press? All these different ministries. We could act like the disciples' arguments of the day and start dividing each other, or we could work together as one unit, though in our different personalities and our different areas of and categories of expertise, and keep working for God along those lines in a faithful way. Whoever receives this child, Jesus says, a symbol of innocence and purity, in my name, with the authority of Christ, well, he's receiving God. And whoever receives Jesus receives the Father, the Creator, who sent Jesus. For the one who is least among all of you, according to the standard of the world's eye, this is the one who is great. Isn't that powerful? Isn't that revealing for us today? Isn't that a principle and a command that we must remain humble as Christians and do what we're supposed to do and not worry about these departments that we must find ourselves in that give us the greatest worldly trophies and achievements? Friends, our crown and our goal and trophy is in heaven. We seek heavenly wealth, spiritual riches. This world and its ways and its social statuses and its economical statuses and who's the greatest on earth, it's going to go away. But Christians who are humble and meek and courageous, well, they're going to live on forever in peace with the great I am. That's where we want to be. Stefan Maillet here, your audio and video servant for this podcast session. We are powered by the Spencer Church of Christ, addedsouls.com. Of course, stay positive, stay focused. We will meet again here tomorrow, Lord willing, and God bless.